I'm Keith Wooden, and welcome to Story Mosaics. It's so good to have you back again, and we're now starting into our regular routine of how we're going to be recording our Story Mosaics episodes. And so each first week of each month, what we're going to be doing, or first Tuesday of each month, we'll be dropping a story that just is one of my stories. Most of them have been published in some format or another, or they've been told 1,000 different times in different formats. And so we'll be doing that on the first Tuesday. The second Tuesday, I'll be doing some interviews of people whose stories are just amazing stories. And you'll have a chance to see that this is why we say everyone has a story. And we want to help you tell your stories better. And so I'll be doing some interviews. And then the third Tuesday of each month, what we'll be doing is listening to your stories. And here's what I'm noticing, okay? I'm just going to be really candid with all of you, because here's the deal. All of you, we've had a great response to our stories. And in fact, man, Brent was on a few weeks ago, and just Brent knocked it out of the park here. And if you've never heard Brent tell a story, you just don't know how riveting his stories are. Brent Henderson with his podcast as well. But then that fourth Tuesday of every month, we're going to be doing something interesting, because we'll be taking apart some of the things that make stories go well. And especially for those of you, here's kind of the what we're noticing is, some of you want to tell stories because you want to be published. Some of you want to tell stories that are much, much on a longer format basis. Like, your story is not going to just be a 15, 18 minute story. You want to tell a story that's more of a novel, and you want to write a novel. You know what? The story format is the same. I've even had some of you who found out I had done some script writing say, I would love to do a script, or even a playwright. And so you'd like to do that. But all of these still have the same formats. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about story formatting and how to create a good story in that respect. And then one of the other things is, some of you have been kind of a little bit hesitant, because you say, I don't even know where to find stories. And one of the things we'll talk about a little bit today at the end of the program even is story mining. How do you mine for stories? And that's like digging for stories. And that's something that is so fascinating to me. My kids always joke about this, and I'll say this probably 1,000 times, but my kids always joke about this, because when I used to pull up to the McDonald's squawk box, you know, to give the order, my kids would hit the floor, because they knew by the time I got up to the window to pay, I was going to be getting the story of a person. Because I found that in people's lives, if you just take and pull a thread, all of a sudden people tell you their stories. The stories just kind of just flow out of them. And so we're going to be doing a little bit of that even today. You know what? Here's the deal, though. When this drops on Tuesday morning at 5 a.m., we're going to be right on the cusp of the election and the voting. At 6 a.m., the polls will open, and that's going to be an amazing thing in this nation, because we've never had, according to the pollsters, we've never had a race that was this close. They still say that it's too close to call. And we know that polls can be so mistaken, because we are a melting pot of people that are city dwellers and rural, and some of them are farming and communities. And all of this comes together in this election moment. And so I'm pretty excited about that. In fact, I'm praying a great deal about those elections and the subsequent reaction. So I got to tell you, I decided just to keep it light today. I decided not to get real heavy, and we're going to have some fun just relating one of the stories in my life that's been a story that I lived several years ago. It was published in a magazine called Single Parent Family Magazine. And at that point I was single in my life, and I was writing for them. And it was kind of an interesting little story that evolved out of a situation, because at that time period, I was going through life at 38 to 42 years old. They used to call that midlife, okay? Midlife, and they used to talk about a midlife crisis. And I don't know whether they still talk about that or not, but people still have them because I used to do and still do a great deal of counseling. I can put my finger on a midlife crisis pretty easily. But here's the deal is whenever a guy, especially a guy, goes out and does something that's a little bit uncharacteristic for them, that is like they go out and buy a new car or they decide to sell the house and get a new house and they build this monster of a house. Or in my case, this was a situation where I was buying a motorcycle. The fact was I was just helping a friend with a motorcycle, but I was 40 years old and everyone wanted to say it was a midlife crisis. Well, I'm here to tell you it was not a midlife crisis. I was just helping a friend. A friend of mine lived in the rural sticks over in Winchester. He did not even live close to a major road there in Winchester. He lived way out in the country and it was not a thoroughfare for traffic. And he knew I lived on a busier road. And he said, "Will you just park this motorcycle out there and sell it for me, help me sell it." And so here's what we decided. We'd split the profits and he'd get half, I'd get half. And my only deal part of it was I could get it running and, you know, drive it around and advertise it that way. And it was in pretty rough condition. Fact was, it probably hadn't been driven for about 15 years. And here's the other fact is, kind of wanted to do it. You know, I kind of wanted to have a, and why not? Why shouldn't I have a motorcycle? I have lived all of my life pretty safe between the narrow lines, right between the rules. And I've not even gone close to the guardrails there. And it was time to let this big boy, spread his wings and fly and live a little closer to the edge. I mean, my life was boring. And a motorcycle, that would change things. And it's starting to sound like a midlife crisis, isn't it? Well, let me assure you, this was not a midlife crisis. A death wish, yes, but not a midlife crisis. In fact, I was out on a limb with a chainsaw sawing the limb off behind me. I didn't know anything about motorcycles. I have never owned a motorcycle. And in fact, I've only ridden a couple of motorcycles, and that was usually tandem with another person. But I went over there, I got a trailer, and I drove over there. I picked it up in Winchester, and I brought it back. And on the way back, I dubbed it Lucy, L-U-C-Y. I don't know where that came from, but maybe it was the double entendre with the fact that L-O-O-S-E-Y was more of what I was going to be living. But it was remarkable, remarkable of how quickly fantasies started to evolve. On my way home, I couldn't help but think about me cruising on the highways on this beautiful motorcycle. I unloaded the cycle, and 5 minutes later, the neighbors were there flocking around me. And I had this sense of pride and satisfaction that washed over me. I was finally in that fraternity of guys in the neighborhood. It was a black Yamaha DT400. At least I think it was black. It was so covered with the dust of benign neglect that I couldn't tell what color it was. And it didn't matter. I had it, and the guys were coming over and talking to me. And a few of them even said, "Hey, when you get this running, I want to ride on it." And I was, it really felt good. And yeah, that's when it started. I had agreed with him we'd try to get $700 for it because it was worth about $900 at that point. And so I dropped $200 in it right away, rebuilding the carburetor. I had a couple of extra little pieces when I was rebuilding the carburetor, but hey, I didn't think they really mattered. I mean, a little couple of really tiny little pins. I mean, how big a deal is that? And then I began to polish it up and refurbish it. I brought some chrome cleaner, and that chrome just was so perfect. Just you could see yourself in that chrome, and the light, the way it hit it, just looked like diamonds there. It was so beautiful. And then I brought this polymer paint refurbisher and guaranteed to bring out back the original luster from that faded glory, and it did. Oh, just looking into that gas tank on that sat between your legs there, and it was so beautiful reflecting again your face in that. Then it was time. After 30-some hours of tedious work on it, I flicked the switch. Battery's dead. In fact, I think the battery had shorted out many years ago. I didn't even know why I didn't think of this. So a trip to the AutoZone to pick up a battery, and I went ahead and picked up a 1995 trickle charger just in case. And the battery was a little bit low, and so it told me that it would take about 12 hours. There's an old phrase that says that a watch pot never boils. Well, that applies to battery chargers as well. It took it a good 12 hours, and I looked at it at least 42 times during that process. The day finally came. I rolled the sickle out of the garage and called to my son. He's about 9 years old at the time, and I said, "Keaton, come out here. I want to show you this. I'm going to start Lucy for the very first time." He came out and he stood between the two columns that were either side of the sidewalk there, and I gave her a crank, and Lucy chortled to life. You know, that throttle and that thunder that comes from those pipes, it was beautiful. I was so excited. I wound it up a little bit, let it roar. It kindled within me some boyhood adrenaline. It reminded me of the days when I used to wrestle. I twisted the throttle again and she thundered. And I exhaled. This was what I had been waiting for. And, you know, I mentioned something to you, though. I've never ridden a motorcycle. I've never been astride of one of these two-wheeled beasts. And I knew nothing of their mechanics. And I need to preface this for the carnage that you're about to hear. I want you to warn children that might be listening in, and they're going to be exposed to some gruesome details that are going to come through this story. Get them out of the room. Tell them that this is no place for them. Now, and if I hear laughter, I'm going to deny you ever knew me. Control yourself, would you? I rev the engine, and I let go of the left grip. I didn't really know what the left grip did, frankly. I had no idea. I was later to learn that it was the clutch. Imagine that. What came next came with lightning efficiency. This is why they call motorcycles widowmakers. As I let go of the hand grip, the front wheel rose from the ground. The act threw me back on the bike, forcing my hand down on the throttle, and Lucy's throttle was now wide open. My feet caught the ground, and now I was chasing Lucy in this awkward, straddled run. Ominously, Lucy was headed directly for the porch where my son stood innocently. The faster I ran, the faster Lucy went. I met the spindles and the banister on the front porch at approximately 20 miles an hour. This is an estimate, I will admit to you, because the cable for the speedometer is attached to the front wheel, and the front wheel was not on the ground any longer. The police were the ones that estimated the speed from the toe skid marks that were left on the pavement. Spindles exploded as the front tire demolished the banister. My rear wheel caught the edge of the raised concrete porch and hurled the cycle towards another set of spindles that were just perpendicular to the first. And they, too, became kindling in my onrush, this wheeled wrecking ball. My toe hung up on the edge of the sidewalk as I was hurled towards my wide-eyed son. My thoughts turned into horrible imagination. What must it be for this young man to watch his father being helplessly manhandled by this bucket of bolts? The next thing I looked up, though, in my front wheel is headed right towards the front door. The window loomed right in front of me. This is when a miracle happened. God, in his mercy, sent angels to derail the chain of my motorcycle. My bike responded to Newton's law of motion and stopped. In a voice that belayed the first 2.5 seconds of terror, my son looked at me and said, "Dad, you're not thinking about giving me a ride on that, are you?" Yamaha DT400 runs well, low mileage. White paint on the front cowling, for sale. Oh, I remember that day well. What a hoot it was, and to see my son's mouth just gaping as I was coming towards him. You know, I told you that sometimes you do something called story mining. And as I recalled and remembered that story, there were too many things about that little bit of history from my life that forced me to start jotting some ideas down. Now, I will tell you that my grandson early on in my life said that, "Papa, you're not really a storyteller. You're a story liar." I think he's right. Okay. So the facts of the story sometimes get confused with the events of real life and the way I perceive them. I don't think of them as story lying. The fact is, it's just, you know, my perception of things. Here's the deal. I promise you that by and large, the details are correct. I will tell you that I had to rebuild the porch. I will tell you that I drug my toes in that awkward chasing of Lucy across the sidewalk and almost through the front porch. But, you know, all the emotions that went with it, they come in retrospect more than anything else. But here's the thing about story mining. When you story mine, you just start looking at life through a different kind of lens. You know what I mean? You just start seeing through a lens that allows you to kind of capture moments here and there. I mentioned to you that I had a situation one time where a young lady told me her story about the semicolon on her wrist. A few months ago, I was in Winchester, Indiana. Again, it's where I pastored for the first 10 years of ministry. And I was there and I was sitting in the car with a guy that I've known for many, many years. And in that moment, I just looked down at his sleeve and he pulled it up and there was his semicolon. He was almost 80 years old. And I got to tell you, it took me aback. I asked him when he got it, and he said he had just gotten it a couple of weeks ago. And then I started just to pull on that thread and hear his story. I'll tell you that story in the future, but what it let me know was that there is a story that everyone has. You have a story, and your stories have transformed your life. And the saddest part about it is when you keep that story inside of you, when you don't share that story, you rob others of those experiences that could transform their lives as well. You rob them of just the moment where they could have just a little bit of an understanding of that they're not that unusual. I used to do a lot of counseling with individuals, and I don't so much anymore. It's kind of known in the community where I live is that Keith is great for the first three visits, and then he runs out of material. And so after that, I'm just a lousy counselor. But one of the things that people will say is they start to tell me their story and what's happened in their life, and they'll say, "Now, I know you've never heard this before, but the fact is that we are a lot more alike than we are different." And, you know, as we sit on the cusp of this election, we have drawn battle lines that are so lines of demarcation between our lives and lines that have made us so far apart. When if we just press the pause button, and we'd listen to one another for a few moments, we'd recognize that we are a lot more alike than we are different. Hey, I wanted to just ask you to do me a favor here. We're closing out this podcast, but I was wondering if you could help us out here at Story Mosaics. because we love letting people know about what's taking place here. And especially, we love the concept of people being able to tell their stories. I just got a notification just moments ago of a person that I've known for many years. And she said, okay, I think I'm ready to tell my story. And her story is one that is filled with so many twists and turns. And she said, the problem is, I think I would tell it better in German than I would in English. And to smile, I said, I don't know that that's going to work. but anyway, would you do me a favor? And that is, many of you are hearing about Story Mosaics through Facebook, and that's great. Whenever you see a moment where you can share that with somebody, where there's a piece that we're putting out there, or a plea that we're putting out there, share it with others so that they can come to know Story Mosaics. Or make sure that you're going out on storymosaics.com. There's an opportunity out there for free just for you to download a story, or just to have a moment where you're telling us a little bit about your history there. And we want you to tell us more about what's going on in your lives and your stories. Hey, thank you for joining us on Story Mosaics.